I have
current geek.
Hello and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the talk show about items of interest to the geeks of the world and you. I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom Merritt.
Hello, Scott Johnson. I am opening the proceedings of Current Geek this week with a load of wonderful news, speculations, and may I say fun.
Thick layer of fandom in the middle of this cake today.
Oh, yeah. Like just you took the knife into the bucket of fandom and you pulled out a big old dollop and spread it thick.
Yeah. We'll get to that in a bit. And people probably already guessing what we're going to be excited about. But let's just say today's best thing of all time this week might be... Might be a shared experience.
I think this might be our first unified pick.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's plenty of things that you and I will go through and we'll go, oh, yeah, we both sort of like the thing we're talking about. But
I don't think we've ever picked the same thing at the same time.
This is a new
momentous day in Current Geek history.
Without question. So strap in, be ready. Here it comes.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering. As do many others in high public office.
Oh, man. What happened this week that we should know about?
I'm still laughing because I'm sure everybody listening is like, we know exactly what the pick is now.
I mean, I think you're
right. South Korea production company CJ Entertainment has been behind director Bong Joon-ho's big hits. You probably have heard of Snowpiercer. You may have heard of Parasite. Those are his two biggest films. He's done a lot more. CJ Entertainment is working on turning its U.S. branch into a wholly independent unit. CJ's U.S. department began as a remake rights seller. So, you know, back in the day, you'd make a Korean movie. No one outside of Korea would hear about it. And then they'd sell the rights to some studio over here in Los Angeles to make a U.S. version of it. They still do that. But now they want to do more actual production. There's some of that going on in the United States already. But right now, when they want to do it, they have to report back into the South Korean unit for decisions because all production is held out of Seoul. So Jerry Ko, CJ's head of international, told Variety, will ultimately have the U.S. office act on its own. It's kind of a big deal for a Korean studio to set up a studio, like a fully functional, autonomous studio in Hollywood.
No doubt. And also on the heels of what apparently is one of the greatest films of the year, Parasite, which you saw, right? What'd you think of it?
I loved it. Yeah. I adored it. Yeah. And I have been satisfied that it's not just because my wife has gotten me into Korean dramas that I liked it. I have passed it along to other people saying, I think you're going to like it. Don't find anything else about it. And they have. So far, I haven't had a single person go watch it and come back and say they didn't like it.
Yeah, it's I haven't seen it yet, but I love Bong Joon-ho's movies. I really like Snowpiercer. It's a gigantic film for me. I love that movie. I also like that Baku thing, whatever it was called on Netflix.
Oh, Okja.
Okja, that's it. I keep saying Baku for some reason. That was really cool. That Troll Hunter thing was cool.
Yeah.
He's got... like really an amazing vision as a director, and especially in genre stuff. I guess Parasite's very different from that, but
I'm always hesitant to say too much, although you can see the trailer, in my opinion, you can see the trailer for Parasite and still enjoy the movie. It's not the kind of trailer that's going to give away the best parts. It's in Korean, and that will turn some people away. Some people are like, I just don't want to read subtitles. Unless they speak Korean, I guess. But I, you know, unlike Snowpiercer, which was shot with mostly American and English actors and in English, this is a Korean movie with Korean actors and everything's in Korean. That does not take away from me. Again, I've built up a little familiarity with reading subtitles, watching all these foreign dramas and stuff. But even so, I think it's still absolutely worth the adventure because it's kind of a detective. It's not a detective. It's kind of a horror story, but it's also kind of a thriller mystery-ish kind of thing. I don't know. I don't want to say too much more.
Got a little dark comedy in there. A little bit of weird all around. And I am all in on that. I do absolutely want to see it. But it's good. I guess what I'm saying is, I guess it's good to see that success critically. We'll probably see that among Oscar nominations this year.
I would at least for elements like cinematography, director, that kind of thing. It may even get a Best Picture nomination. Yeah. We'll see.
Well, now that they got 10, they could probably fit it in there, but also nice to hear that they're going to expand their stuff. And I welcome it because I think that guy's got a pretty singular vision. All of his movies really speak to me. And I'm all for that kind of, I don't know, talent from somewhere else poking their head in here and making some rad stuff. So yeah, whether it's him or, you know.
Their television industry in Korea is really getting good. There are shows that I have watched that are absolutely better than broadcast television here. Mm-hmm. Probably as good as your USA kind of dramas. And getting close, you know, getting closer and closer to that FX HBO level mm-hmm. all the time. The movies are even farther advanced because they've been doing movies even longer than TV.
Yeah. Well, watch something coming out of those guys. CJ Entertainment.
Wednesday, November 6th in the United States, some mobile customers got a little surprise. It didn't matter what carrier they were on. They received some text messages that originally had been sent on February 14th of the year. So about 9 months earlier, Valentine's Day. You could imagine that wouldn't cause any kind of untoward misunderstandings, would it? The text appeared to have never been sent or even received until now. But later, people were like, maybe I was just not remembering sending it. But they weren't showing up in their sent messages a lot of the times. It happened across T-Mobile, Sprint, AT&T, Verizon, across iPhone and Android. It, of course, had some upsetting instances like text from or referring to people who have since died in the intervening 9 months, among other issues. The Verge reports that a company called Cineverse, which provides third-party networks or networking services to mobile carriers, says a single server was to blame. Wow. The server failed on February 14th. So this is the kind of server that processes the messages, right? Mm-hmm. Messages were in the buffer, getting ready to be delivered when the server went down. And when they were going through doing some testing on November 7th, they found the server was offline. They brought it back up. And of course, anybody who's had messages in their outbox on Outlook knows when you get off the plane and you reconnect to the internet, suddenly those messages go out. Mm-hmm. And that can cause issues if you weren't really careful about what was in your outbox. Same thing happened here. All these messages were sitting on a dark server. As soon as the server got power again, it went back on and delivered all those messages that had been trapped in the server while it was off.
I mean, I guess the surprising part about the story to me is that there's a third party handling the text messaging stuff. I just assumed that every carrier had their own, you know, I don't know what that system is, but their own way of dealing with all of that. And there wouldn't be a case like this. But then, I don't know.
Well, think about it. Think about cloud services.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
You hire third parties, man. And when you start to really dig in, it's not even just about cloud. Many companies are mostly made up of contracted workers these days because it defers liability and benefits issues off onto those third parties. I know at Google, they have a huge third party contractor that employs large numbers of the people who work for Google, don't work for Google. They work for this other company. So it doesn't shock me that they would have said, hey, there's a company that specializes in just managing text messages and multiple carriers would contract with them to handle the bandwidth and the backhaul for that.
I wonder if there's got to be, how many were sent out? Do we have the total estimation?
There were all kinds of estimates flitting around, so I didn't write it down because they kept changing it.
Okay.
I never did see a definitive number, but you know, it's tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands. There's got to be somebody in there who meant to send a message to somebody on Valentine's Day and it didn't go. Is there maybe even a reply? Somebody said something real nice to them. They didn't reply. Mm-hmm. To them, that was grounds for breakup. He never answers me. We're not going to be together anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And then all these months later, that message comes through, dated that date, and you realize, oh,
man. I think
man.
He just wrote a great romantic comedy, right?
Yeah, you've got the mail
three. Like, no, I replied. You liar. Yeah. Show me the reply then. Yeah. I don't see it.
You had me at reply. I mean, it writes itself. But there's got to be somebody who experienced that, and it kind of bums me out. And I know there have been cases of, like in my case, I've sent texts to people that I never hear back, and then you're like later on saying, hey, you never answered me. And they're like, oh, I never got it. I'm not saying it's one of these deals.
That's why I always kind of bug people, if it's important,
yeah,
and be like, do you have an answer to that? Did you see that? Did you get that? I don't, if I'm sending something important, like for instance, the time that we record Current Geek, I'll make sure that you respond before I assume you saw it.
Right. Right, right, right. And when a lot of times what will happen is people just they missed it, or, you know, they had 10 texts and they thought they checked
them
all.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, yeah, I saw it, and I never responded because I saw it. And
yeah, but now I wonder, have any of these just gotten lost in this weird way? And I don't know. I didn't get any of these.
This is pretty unusual. Yeah, I wasn't part of this.
And either. You didn't hear anything from DTNS listeners or anybody who, like, had this happen?
No. You think about the millions, probably billions of text messages sent every day in the United States. This is a very small percentage.
Drop in the bucket.
I think there's another good, we could do like ghost text. That could be another movie based on this.
Call it ghost text.
Like when the text arrives from someone who has since passed on, it causes them to rematerialize.
And then your phone starts sending you messages that are,
I was trapped in the server.
I'm into it. You listen, listeners, ignore everything we just said. We're taking this to CJ Productions.
CJ Entertainment, exactly.
Yeah, we're going to get this made. Do it in the Chinese or Korean subtitles. We're looking.
Hey, maybe we could cast James Dean in it.
Oh, all right. That seems like a transition.
Yeah, Magic City Films has obtained the rights to use the image of James Dean to star in a Vietnam-era action drama called Finding Jack. And, of course, if you don't know, James Dean died in a car wreck in 1955. So this is using his image with the approval of the estate. Canadian VFX Banner Imagine Engine will be working alongside South African VFX company MOI Worldwide to construct a full body CGI version of Dean using actual footage and photos. Another actor will voice him. They're not going to recreate his voice. They're probably going to get a sound alike, is my guess. Mm-hmm. Finding Jack, the movie itself, is based on the existence and abandonment of more than 10,000 military dogs at the end of the Vietnam War. I assume one of the dogs is named Jack, and one of the characters is trying to find them. James Dean's image will not be playing the main character. It's a secondary lead.
Okay, here's the thing. So we talked when this news hit. I was on DTNS that day, and we were talking pre-show about it.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of stuff going back and forth about this is weird or this is icky or this is whatever. And you had said, well, think about it for a minute. You know, the family approves of it, but also, you know, we're getting closer and closer to CGI and real people being interchangeable, or at the very least can, you know, hold the same ground in the same film. And sometimes it's uncanny, but sometimes it's not, and blah, blah, blah. So we had all these like kind of philosophical questions about where this is all headed. But in my case, my only question is, why not just some other actor? I don't understand why it's James Dean. Is there they haven't convinced me there's a reason they need James Dean's image for this World War II story. It could
have
be
you
anybody.
Sat down with them and had extensive conversations about that?
I mean,
would you say
no.
They haven't convinced you?
I think it's a good point. But and maybe something happens in the film where it's like, oh, well, of course, this is why they did it. But I don't, on the face of it, it's like, okay, well, that's a story you could tell without a CGI James Dean. You could be
okay. Yes, no, I think that's a better point, right? Because if you say why James Dean, well, I mean, if they had done Cary Grant, you'd have the same question.
Same
why Cary
exact
Grant,
thing.
Right?
Yeah, same
it's question. It's not about James Dean versus another dead actor. It's like, why do you need a dead actor for this?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Why not? Is there not someone else? And I think the only answer that makes sense to me is because now people are talking about Finding Jack and they would not have been had we cast someone else cast a human, living human.
And that's funny you say that because part of me is cool with the stunt. Like it's a gimmick and I'm kind of like, okay, we'll try that. Let's see how that ends up as an experiment, right? Like part of me is okay with that. But the other part of me is like, well, yeah, but if you're trying to if you want me to take your movie seriously, this is a weird stunt to do, but if you're trying to like push the envelope and see what can happen, then maybe I support it. I don't know. I'm in a weird place headspace with this.
I'm going to create a story. I'm going to make up a story. This is not based in any kind of knowledge here. I just want to put that out right away in front, but I could imagine a scenario where they're sitting around talking about who would be right for the different roles. And one of them says, gosh, you know, who would be great for this secondary lead? Some James Dean type, right? Some kind of James Dean type be perfect? And they're kicking around people or like, well, you know, this person's kind of got that feeling. And then one of them says, what if we just make James Dean? And they're like, well, that's so crazy. It just might work. And or, you know, something more believable than that. And then they I've got a buddy at a VFX company who's been working on this kind of recreation stuff. Let's call him and blah, blah. And then from there, it spirals out. They're like, well, let's talk to the estate. Would they be into it? You know, that is kind of how these ideas happen. And of course, at a certain point, the idea gains acceleration because of the stunt aspect. And they're like, oh my God. And then so many people will start talking about this movie if we do this. Right.
Yeah.
So it's may not be the origination of the idea, but it certainly is the thing that pushes it forward.
That's an interesting take. And you're probably right. And I could see the money guys getting excited because they're like,
oh yeah,
well, this is an interesting movie, but it's not Avengers. We need to draw people to, we need to make money on this. So actually, this gimmick is a way for us to really tout it and promote it, and then people are going to be super curious and they're going to pay money to see it. So I don't know. Your theory holds. I like your conspiracy a lot.
It's a tale, not my NaNoWriMo novel, but it is.
Oh man! All right,
I'm full of tales this morning. It's interesting.
Actually, by the way, real quick check-in. It's the 15th. It's mid-month. How's your NaNoWriMo going?
Oh, it's going okay. I haven't worked on it yet today. Second week of any NaNoWriMo is always a pain for me.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I always sit down, start, like, it's almost like clockwork on the 8th of the month. Like the first week I'm like barreling away because I've been thinking about this story and I'm like, oh, it's writing itself. The characters are, you know, they're great. Then I hit the 8th and I'm like, I have no idea what to do next. And that's the beauty of NaNoWriMo. I actually said this on the Reading Glasses podcast this week too, is NaNoWriMo makes me sit down and write anyway, even though I don't want to, even though I'm like, I don't know what to do. I just start doing things. And eventually I've, you know, blown something up or had a character get mad at another character. And the story progresses. That's the beauty of NaNoWriMo. It kind of pushes me through that second week. And so now I'm starting to see where I might go next. And things are rolling downhill, but I'm at like 30,000, 31,000 words.
That's pretty good. Yeah. I just drew a tiny little rhinoceros. Yeah. That's my nano rhino. Cause that's my understanding is what this is all about.
Very small rhino.
Yeah. A little tiny rhino. Yeah.
That's anyway. Good. Have you found that daylight saving time has affected your ability to draw?
It has messed with it some. It has made me, it's weird. Ever since daylight savings, I wouldn't call it artist block, but it's actually affected the way my timing on when I usually draw or when I get the inspiration usually or whatever. And it has kind of fouled me up. I'll be honest.
I noticed the dogs mostly in the evening are coming up to me an hour before dinner time saying, it's dinner time. Yep. We don't have a clock.
No, they don't. they don't adhere to this stuff at all. They never liked the thing. So yeah,
they're like, we don't look at watches. This is the time.
Yeah, the cat fall
back for what?
The cat doesn't seem to care. He's up at all hours and doing weird stuff at night now that he wasn't doing before. And I don't know why this year I've noticed it more than most, because you know I've been through a lot of these, but for some reason this particular fallback time has been noticeably weird with the pets, with my brain, with schedules, with daylight, like all of it. I don't like it.
Well, there's hope.
Oh, good.
A number of states, including California, Florida, Washington, and Oregon, I'm sorry, it's not Utah yet, have taken legislative steps to get rid of daylight saving time by making it permanent.
Whoa.
So in other words, it's not actually getting rid of daylight saving time. It's getting rid of standard time.
Yeah.
It's saying, let's just make daylight saving time the time in our state. A poll by the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research found that 4 in 10 Americans would like to see their clocks just stay on standard time year round. Most of the people surveyed, the largest answer was for just keep it on standard time. 3 in 10 said, no, I like it on daylight saving. Let's do it on daylight saving time. But that means 7 of 10 said, just keep the same time year round. One or the other. Mm-hmm. While 3 of 10 say, no, I like jerking myself around twice a year. Wait, I may have biased that reporting. 3 out of 10 said they like it just like it is.
I was hoping that was a real quote, darn it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Arizona does this, although I don't remember which it is that they're on. They don't change, like this last change changed it for them in juxtaposed to me, but for the rest of the year after the spring forward business, I guess standard time, they are with us. So I don't know what that means. I don't know which they stayed with.
So they are on... they are on Pacific time. They're on my time standard because we're into standard time right now.
Right.
But when it goes to daylight saving, they shift over to you. Is
that
right?
That's what it is. I believe that's correct. If it's not, it's the opposite. It's one of those two.
Yeah. But they don't change their time. So when everyone else around them changes their time, they align with a different situation.
Yeah. And I've always admired that because I just think it would be cool and I want to do it. Utah is notoriously late on all adoptions in states, things that big states all over the country start to adopt and then we'll finally do it. So I'm not holding my breath or anything, but I'm all for this. I want it to happen. I don't understand why we still do it. There's no reason to do it. As far as which one to stick to, I don't really care. Honestly, it doesn't matter. You know, daylight later at night maybe is cool, I guess.
I mean, I think that's the reason they're saying let's just keep it year round is the whole point of having daylight saving time was to give you extra hours during the summer.
Right.
Either for energy conservation or some people way back in the day were arguing it was good for the farmers. Although that never quite
added up.
Worked for me because I'm like, all the farmers I know, maybe I don't know the right farmers, but I do know some. And all the farmers I know just got up when it was light and went out in their farm. They didn't, you know, say, well, it's 7 a.m. time for the farming. Right. You know, they just took advantage of whatever light was there. So.
Yeah, I think that's true. So I don't know who's arguing that we keep it. But as far as I know, like, there aren't any big market reasons, right? Like, that's always what
I try
to think of.
Energy conservation because businesses do go by a clock.
Right.
And so if you have more daylight, that means less lights they have to run and that sort of thing. I'm not sure that makes much of a difference anymore either, because now we've started to calculate the productivity lost from people being sleepy and having to readjust and all that.
Right. I just want, you know, usually these things stick around because, like, no one's going to change the year or the Gregorian calendar. No one's going to mess with those things too much because they actually would mess with entire economic systems. And
it was actually a big deal when England switched from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar. They lost like 20 days in October. There were some riots and stuff. Like it's traumatic to do that sort of thing.
It reminds me when my sister was talking about this because she was in Sweden for so long. But when Sweden decided to just all at once have everybody switch sides of the road driving. So now they drive like we do.
Wow.
Yeah. That was a heck of a week for them.
I would have stayed off the road.
I would have too. I would have avoided driving and all of that. And there were problems, but they just kind of cold turkeyed it, ripped that Band-Aid off and made it happen. And to this day, I think that's kind of impressive in a weird way. Yeah. So we should do that with daylight savings. I don't think the risks
are there. It would be less
there.
Traumatic with daylight saving if you just said, well, we're not changing the clocks.
Right.
It wouldn't cause anyone to have trauma unless they... Because most people forget daylight saving time is either ending or beginning.
Right.
Right. And then it's like all these big things like, hey, everybody, don't forget to change your clocks. If we just didn't do that, that wouldn't be true. It'd be less traumatic.
I agree. We have this solved already.
Yeah.
We're good.
We solved so much in this show.
I know. Well, I hope the world appreciates it. Solve this final story. I have no problem.
Yeah. Disney Plus launched on Tuesday, November 12th, with a new Star Wars TV series called The Mandalorian and a High School Musical series and Lady and the Tramp movie. Mm-hmm. Like most popular online services, it had a raft of issues at launch, but it seems to have settled down into usability now, as with most of these big launches. Now that everybody can watch it, what do you think of the service? Let's not talk about any of the individual shows particularly, but what do you think of the service Disney Plus?
So far, I mean, there have been a couple of issues that I don't think I can really count, like they cropped The Simpsons from 4x3. At least the seasons that weren't 16x9 natively, they cropped those down.
And FX knew that was an issue because they had gone through the exact same issue when they brought the Simpsons to the web in the FX Now app. Like, yeah,
I don't know what
that
was
choice,
either. But, maybe that's a huge job to take 30 years of, well, 20 years of content.
But they already did it.
I guess they did.
If you go into FX Now, or if you went into FX Now and watched it, it was 4.3.
Yeah, maybe there's, you know, this is all a pretty big launch with a lot of stuff on the line. Maybe this is just like, we're here, we got it. Okay, let's go.
I'm saying it took more work to do this than to just point at the FX Now database and be like, take the same stuff.
I would agree, but I have a feeling this may have been algorithmically done. I think digitally cropping may have happened with all of those, and it may have happened because just someone said, look, it's easier for us to just do it all at once. And it's already going to match the newer seasons because they're already 16x9, we don't have to do anything special with those. So let's just match it to those. I don't think it's the right choice.
That's what it sounds like to me. Is some executive said, no, that's ridiculous. I don't care if people get mad. We're going to make it look the same.
Yeah, nobody wants to watch 4x3. Yeah, what is this, the 20s? So anyway.
I'm Barbara Business.
Oh, Barbara Business. it's the service, though, in particular, you know, rough launch day, like you mentioned, all of that aside, I kind of expected that. That wasn't that big of a shock. Just because this is a big deal and it's like a new video game getting launched with online features, like you're going to have problems. And thankfully it did even out. But in terms of the actual usability and service of the thing, I've used it on browser, Apple TV, and my phone. Those are the three places I've had it installed so far. And it does basically what you expect it to do, but it's got some strange behaviors. Like when you unpause on the browser, didn't seem to matter which browser I was using. Only used two, but it didn't seem to matter. But if you unpause it, it takes forever for the UI elements to go away.
And
you can't force them to do it. It's a small thing. It's not that big a deal.
They fade out automatically on their own schedule, and you can't do anything about
it. Yeah, it's not great. So there's a few little things like that that the others have just gotten really good at over time. Netflix's original player kind of sucked too, but that's, you know, it's gotten to a really nice place. And so I'm 100% sure that they will refine that. It'll get better. The other thing is, for some reason, whenever I launch anything for the first time in Chrome, it launches muted, and I have to unmute it. Again, tiny thing, probably just a bug. It'll probably get fixed in future stuff. This is just a browser experience. Then the other thing is this, and this is my biggest drawback. Otherwise, I think everything is fine. And that is, it doesn't remember where I was, or when I look at the listing of, let's say, Simpsons episodes, because I have been binging those. It doesn't show, like on Netflix, you get a little red line underneath showing how much of it you've watched. So it's a great way to say, oh, I've seen up till there. That one I'm halfway through. Click it and let's pick right up. It picks right up if you know what episode it is, but there's no indication of what you've already seen at that view. And it drives me bonkers because I'd have to remember, well, wait a minute, where the hell was I in this season? And was it this? And did I already see this? And so I have to experiment a little bit. That's annoying.
I actually noticed I went in to watch, I think, A New Hope on the Apple TV in my bedroom, and I stopped it. And then I went to the Apple TV in the living room. And when I clicked from the Apple TV interface, not from within Disney Plus, to start it, it just started it over at the beginning. It didn't take me to where I had left off.
Yeah, it's annoying.
So it didn't properly communicate that endpoint somehow.
I'm a little worried that that's a... I mean, that's the stuff you take for granted on these other services because they've ironed all that out and you just sort of expect it and it works fine. I will say that Amazon Prime sometimes has this problem with me where it forgets where I was. So it's not like everyone else is perfect or anything.
Sure.
Overall, though, I have to say, as a highly, you know, anticipated, high profile launch of a thing, I feel like it went pretty good. There's a lot of stuff there. More is being added all the time. We'll talk a little bit about one of those here in a sec. But the quality, like the playback quality, looks great. I'm not having any issues with sound or any of those things.
And the 4K presentation of the Star Wars films, I think, looks marvelous.
Yeah, it really does. That stuff
there
looks
great. There is the whole Han shot first fiasco again.
Mm-hmm.
Another edit has been made. But and that
the McCluckin really or whatever he says.
Yeah.
I love that. But anyway.
I think my... It's not a problem, but my reaction to Disney Plus the first day we had it was I watched the one thing I was dying to watch and had a great time.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, what else?
Yeah.
Not that much. I watched a little bit of the Jeff Goldblum thing and I love Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. I really like that so far. I'm into it.
You know, so that was kind of fun, but it's not the sort of show where I'm like, can't wait for the next one. Where is it? You know, I was tooling around the interface. I'm like, there's nothing here getting me excited. Mm. Part of it is because I'm not a huge Disney fan. Part of it is because I just rewatched all the Marvel movies. I also just rewatched all the Star Wars movies. So those are not pulling me in because I just watched all of them. So a lot of what's in there isn't, it didn't feel like I had a wonderland of content to play around in like I expected it to.
Mm. Yeah. I think you're like, you know what? You're like me on a Steam summer sale. Because those things will come along and I'll go, ooh, summer sale. And I'll get in there and I'm like, okay, wait, I have that. And I look at this huge list and realize I have everything they're selling. This is ridiculous. And it's totally a me problem, but it happens. And I think you're kind of like that. And I'm a bit like that too, to be honest. I mean, I do like a lot of old Disney stuff. So I am excited to start digging through those things. But weirdly for me, it's been the point of entry for me is all about two things. It's about Mandalorian and it's about Simpsons reruns. And that was already an FX thing that you had when you had the FX Now app. So it's not like you were pining for that the same way I was.
I do feel like the Simpsons prints look better, even with the whole cropping thing.
I've
watched a couple of those on Disney Plus too, and it is just a nicer look. And there's no ads.
Yeah.
FX Now always put in ads, and now there's no ads.
There's zero ads. You just go and go and go. I'm into season two already, and I just love it. To me, it's comfort food, and And so it's weird in a way. I'm like, you know what? It's worth $6.99 a month for me to get that and to have this other new show I'm super into. And that is okay for now. And that, you know, knowing all that other stuff is there too is great. My kids are freaking out because they're so stoked about all the stuff they grew up with. They can't wait to watch Mulan 100 times. They want to watch Hercules. They want to watch, you know, everything that they love. So it's going to get the work out here in the house more so than like HBO did when it launched as a service, because that was really just for me and Kim. You know, things like that. So I think it has a long tail on it, but I think your experience is interesting. And I'm sure that within our circles, there are people like you that are like, you know, not really.
I'm not saying it's bad or I'm going to cancel it. It's worth the $7 for what I am getting out of it.
Sure, of course. Right now.
I just expected to have, you know, a day filled with joy of exploring this huge catalog. I mean, that's kind of what Disney got me excited with that big long trailer of all the stuff. But I think part of it was like, yeah, all I cared about was seeing those little clips on the trailer. To be honest, now I'm like, well, I'm not going to actually watch the Apple Dumpling Gang.
Imagine, like, I mean, that's a good point. I might watch Hot Lead and Cold Feet. I like that movie a lot. But yeah. But if you go, let's say Tom went 5 years without seeing any of these things that make that service unique. You'd look at it and go, oh man,
right?
Look at this treasure trove of things I've missed in the last 5 years. So I think there's a, you know, there are going to be people like that I know there are people that see this and are just diehard Disney fans, and what they think they are getting for $6.99 a month is a pittance for a gigantic library. The vault is finally open.
Oh, right. The vault stuff, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Which is still the dumbest thing in the world, but, you know, now it's open. They even use the language on the site and it annoys me.
Out of the
me.
Vault. I know.
Yeah. It's like out of the vault. Oh, you mean that?
It's almost like a threat. Like, yeah. Could go back in.
Yeah. You mean that artificial construct you created years ago to sort of create scarcity. I hate that. So annoying. But what's not annoying is how much great support we get on our stories every week. Jeff Rose, very heavy Jeff Rose this week. But Tom, should we thank him and anyone else for this week's stories?
Yeah, thanks to Jeff Rose, and Elephant789 with the CJ Entertainment story. Thank you to both those folks for submitting the stories we used on the show, but also to everybody who goes in and votes. Even if you don't have time to collect something and submit it, go see what the other folks have put in there and do some voting at currentgeek.reddit.com.
I like that idea. Time for us to do a little segment called Keep on Rolling, where Tom reads Scott a passage of French literary critic Roland Barthes' seminal work, Mythologies. I love these. So what are we doing this week?
All right. This week, the passage that I want to read to you is this, Scott.
Okay.
To instill into the established order, capped established order, to instill into the established order the complacent portrayal of its drawbacks has nowadays become a paradoxical but incontrovertible means of exalting it.
Okay, hold on. So to instill in the established order, meaning the status quo or the...
We're talking about like the mainstream.
The mainstream, right? The thing that's sort of most common. The complacent portrayal of its drawbacks, meaning we don't really focus on why it's not great.
Yeah.
Has always become a paradoxical but incontrovertible means of exalting it.
So what he's saying here is the established order shows its drawbacks, shows its flaws with this sort of blasé, complacent, like, yeah, that's the way it is. And because of that, it's a means of exalting the established order.
Wow. I think I get it. I think that one actually is now in my head and working. It's functioning properly.
I interpret it to be a little bit of they inoculate the public against criticism by... You sort of, you know, complacently portraying the drawbacks as sort of like, well, that's just, you know, that's what you get. But it's the best system that we have.
I'm going to start talking like Roland so that in 100 years, people think I was a genius. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. I think you can and should.
I'm already there. I'm almost there. All right. Well, that was awesome as always. Hey, don't forget, you guys, this show that we do, we'll pause here in the middle to tell you that it's brought to you by you. Yeah, that's right. The fine support of individuals like you. If you like what you listen to on this show, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/currentgeek. I just about to finish up today. This month's, or I guess it'll be December's, custom art cards, which you can only get through supporting our system. And there are people out there once in a while remind me on Twitter, hey, I've collected all of them. When's the next one? Well, I'm excited that it's coming. And it will be Star Wars related, which is also exciting, I think, at least for me. So check that out. It's patreon.com/currentgeek. There are many things to get, but only you can go there and get it. That's patreon.com/currentgeek.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Forecast used to be a show. It's now a segment, and it's all about predicting the future. And this week, Tom has predicted said future. In what way, Tom?
Here's my prediction for Forecast this time, Scott.
All right.
Professional sports with intelligent animals.
What? Okay, hold on. So like football or just you're not saying an existing sport necessarily. It could
not
be whatever.
Necessarily. Could be football, could be some new sport, but it's the development of intelligence in animals, or even possibly just the recognition of intelligence in animals and understanding better how to communicate with them and convincing them with the animal's consent, because they're intelligent. They're able to give that, like, hey, do you want to play some games? Dolphins love playing games. Mm. I could totally see a dolphin water polo team competing.
And would we be the intended audience, or would other intelligent animals, or both, I guess?
That's a really good question. Mm. I was assuming we would be the audience for this, but obviously if we have a world with intelligent animals, we're not the only audience.
And some of those intelligent animals might be into the NFL or NHL or MLB.
Turns out cats love watching dolphin water polo. Because it makes them hungry.
All right. That's a whole lot of fish-looking fish there for them. I'm all for this idea, but I always liked the idea that we would get better and better at understanding what animals are thinking, and that we would probably end up doing it with, I don't know, like brain implants or something that would then translate what they thought. Because I want to get to a place where we actually can know, finally. Is my dog just thinking food, 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 owner, 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 food, food, food? Like, is that it? Is that as far as we go? Or
probably some poop and pee.
Yeah, I'm poop and pee in there. But is there any nuance that I don't know about?
Right.
And we're never going to get there if we don't
food,
try.
Food, but not that food.
Right.
Better food.
Yeah.
No, better I'm settling food. For this food.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is there nuance? I'd like your steak, but I'll take this hard kibble if that's all you've got.
My German Shepherd, Ray, she has learned now to just come up and look as pitiful as possible, sitting, staring at you when you're eating something she wants.
Yeah, this is a common practice of Boomer as well. And our dog, Boomer, who we always say, okay, Boomer, to, which is kind of a problem now. she does the same thing, and she's got a little German Shepherd in her. And it's that there's something in that face. I can't quite put words to it, but they know how to look sad when they want your steak or your chicken.
There's something that happens to their face. I'm sure it's in our own perceptions, but there's something that happens that makes them look like the neoteny is taken up to another level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great way of putting it. Well, anyway, I look forward to this. It'll probably involve balls and cool gear. Like they'd wear some cool padding, these animals.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to stress, I know I said this, I want to stress that this would all be the animals wanting to do this. This would not be the current system of, like, you know, horse races and stuff where the animals are kind of tricked into it and they really don't have a choice. And it's, you know, arguably not really humane. This would be like, you know, the dogs that want to play dog football would be like, yeah, we're all excited to have a safe, fun time playing this sport.
Yeah. We'd call it dog ball. And that would be awesome. Also, I want gorillas all up in this. I want the gorillas to have some sort of wrestling, or I don't know what it is, whatever the sport is.
Gorilla wrestling. Yeah. Yeah, like a sumo wrestling kind of thing.
Dude. Oh, that'd be amazing. So this is a good idea. I mean, I really actually would sort
monkey
of be into this.
Chess.
Would they be highly prized and paid for their work like the we
do? Oh, of course. Okay. Yeah. That would be the controversy. The controversy would not be about exploiting animals because of, you know, they lack consent. The controversy would be, are we paying these animals too much?
Right. And well, if they're intelligent, well, we also have pets now. They're that intelligent who are complaining always, and they have their own like gossip papers and things about, you know, professional sports animals and how annoyed they are.
Yeah, it depends on your pet. Some pets may just be, you know, charmers and lovely to be around. Others may be kind of pills. You never know.
I think we're committing the ultimate in anthropomorphization.
Oh my gosh,
animals.
We are. We absolutely are.
We are really putting human beings into animals, and may as well just be furries.
Maybe that's how this happens.
Yeah. This is a furry podcast.
Graft in human DNA.
I like that idea a lot. All right. So there's that. Now this. Oh, you know what? I didn't move that thing. All right, I'm going to play. Oh my gosh, Scott, you're so dumb. All right, I used to have this little triumphant thing, but I don't have it anymore, so I'll play this one. Okay, that's good enough.
That's pretty much the same
I gotta
vibe.
Find that freaking thing. It's the best thing of all time this week. And therein, we talk about the thing that really jumped out at us this week and just made it feel like the greatest thing. Today, we're doing a first for current geek history. We are both choosing the exact same thing that affected us this week. Yep. That's right. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. Today, we're happy to announce that The Mandalorian is our joint choice for the greatest thing of all time this week. <That's right. laughs> I have a feeling. I didn't know, Tom. I didn't know you had that one on your board. That's pretty good. Here, I got one. Oh, that's a scream, and it was really quiet.
Well, I'll scream, yeah.
Anyway, so I cannot say enough about what I love about The Mandalorian, and I'm already starting to annoy people Mad Max Fury Road style with it, because what I like about Star Wars is the following, and it's what I've always loved the most. I liked other things. I like Jedis. I like lightsabers. I like, you know, the saga and the overarching stories and the Empire and the Rebellion. That stuff's great. But what I really have always liked as from a kid forward was the dirty outer rim of planets, the disgusting bars and taverns with weird aliens in them, all up to no good. I like smugglers. I like bounty hunters. I like weird forms of currency. I like strange aliens making dirty deals in dark corners of Coruscant where you can't see
them. You're just describing The Mandalorian.
I mean, kind of, really, yeah.
Would you have said it this way before?
I would have. You might have. I would have, because those were always my favorite bits. Tatooine, favorite planet. Favorite moments happen in bars and stuff like that. Scum and villainy, like dirty ships. That's my Star Wars. That's what I glommed onto. And I actually think it extends to a lot of other genre fiction that I like, including Mad Max, which I talk about all the time. There's almost an apocalyptic kind of Western quality to what The Mandalorian is. And I could not be happier about this. So that's my take. How are you feeling?
Yeah, same thing. I love all that same stuff. And I love Good, Bad, and the Ugly, you know, Fistful of Dollars, all that, a few dollars more. And I love that he is taking that ethos, bringing it to Star Wars, bringing us back to that New Hope era universe where R2-D2 is all scratched up, everything's scratched up. I love that the Mandalorian gets shot with a laser and you hear it ping off his armor.
Yep.
I love that there are loads of wonderful illusions that don't get in the way. Some people don't like it when you allude to the previous properties because it gets in the way of the story, right? Sometimes like, really, do we have to see Darth Vader in the scene? Is that necessary? I still like that, but I love the way Jon Favreau is doing it, right? Instead of it being front and center, you just see the annoying character from Return of the Jedi that we all hate, who had the screeching laugh, being roasted.
Oh, that was amazing.
Another version of it looking worried that it's going to be roasted. Yeah, that stuff like that's great.
It's really good. They're small things like that, but you're right. They don't get in the way. There's other world building going on that's brand new.
Yeah.
The score doesn't steal from John Williams at all. I don't mean steal, but you know, it doesn't riff on that theme at all. It's its own tone, its own music, its own soundtrack, which gives it a feeling of all of its own, yet still it's clearly very Star Wars. I mean, they'd have to really go off the rails for me to not say this every week as we get new episodes. That's how into it I am, and I could not be happier that this is what this is. And Jon Favreau, honestly, is a little hit and miss for me. Like, I think Iron Man 1's great. Iron Man 2 is kind of not great. I think that his Jungle Book remake was pretty good. The Lion King thing was kind of worthless, or not worthless, but sort of pointless. He's not 100% all the time for me. So I came in this just a tiny bit worried that this would be a Favreau thing that I didn't like, or that they'd try to play it too safe the way that I feel the current trilogy, which I enjoy, but I feel like it plays things a little safe. Repeats a lot of things we already love about Star Wars just to be safe. This isn't doing that. This is going in new places. This is doing new stuff while still staying there somehow. And the casting is insane. I cannot say enough about hiring freaking Nick Nolte for a role I won't spoil. People just need to watch it. The fact that, what's his name? Werner Herzog is in this, who's mostly known for his documentaries, but that dude's a trip on screen.
Oh my God. He's so heavy.
He's
right?
So good. And rusty old stormtrooper, just everything about it, Tom, is just like,
yeah,
in my blood.
And if you're out there screaming spoiler, yes, we're giving you some details that maybe weren't in the trailer. None of them are plot points.
No, none of them. None. Zip. I mean, there are plot points. We don't want to give those away, and we won't. But, you know, the casting has been set a long time ago. And, in fact, it took me a while to figure out that Nick Nolte had indeed entered the scene in some form. And I absolutely loved that. There's a new phrase that I won't even say the new phrase because I want people to experience it for the first time. But there's a new thing I want to say all the time when I'm done talking. Like, it's just so great. And it's such a relief and such a delight that they got it. And I know there are going to be some people that this isn't their thing. I'm not saying this is going to be universally beloved.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But it's right now. I mean, I know I'm in the glow of it, but right now it is my favorite Star Wars thing they have done since the original trilogy for me.
I was explaining to Sarah Lane, who hasn't seen it. She's my co-host on DTNS, if you don't know, that if you always wanted Star Wars to take risks and tell new stories within the universe, you're going to love it. If you love spaghetti westerns or even just westerns in general, I think you're going to love it. And if you just want like a really fun action story that moves along quickly with interesting characters, you're going to love it. Like, yeah. if it doesn't hit you on one of those three, then yeah, it's probably not for you. If you want a musical, you're definitely not going to like this.
No, but you'll love the music. And I think you'll love the character. If you like Westerns and you've never liked Star Wars, I still think you're going to like this. Like, they really dig deep into that. If you like lone warrior, lone hero, yep, complicated stuff. If you like world building and stuff they barely explain and you can't wait to hear more about it. I don't want to hit to what that was, but you know, there's some stuff that is amazing. If you just want to know that Star Wars has more than Imperial credits as a currency, that's enough for me to watch it.
If you've gone to Galaxy's Edge at Disney World or Disneyland, you're going to love it.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot to take in. It's a triumph, in my opinion, thus far. It's only an hour in, so again, I don't want to pass judgment on all nine chapters.
Well, it's actually 2 hours. Episode 2 dropped this morning as we're recording, and neither one of us have seen it yet.
Yeah, we haven't seen it yet, but we are...
Which is inexcusable.
Yeah, it's just something else, and the 8-year-old Star Wars fan in me is just on fire right now.
As you were talking about this, Garrett Weinzierl, who co-hosts The Instance with you and Let's Talk About Star Wars with me and Jenny Josephson, texted me and said, Scott may join us on Monday for Let's Talk About Star Wars.
Yeah, I am going to sneak and I said, in there.
That's funny. We're recording Current Geek right now talking about The Mandalorian.
Yeah, everyone's going to get sick of me. I'm serious. I've really set myself up to ruin everyone's day if they listen to everything I'm ever on. So I'm warning you all now, but I may pop in there as well on Monday. And
yeah, please do. That'd be awesome.
Sing some additional praises. But absolutely, Tom and I's best thing of all time this week. Pretty uniformly. I really don't have anything bad to say. I wish I did. I like to be even with my approach to stuff, but I really don't.
I had to wait till late at night to watch it. That's my big complaint.
There you go. I'm you know, my complaint is I watched it before the rest of the family and now they're all mad at me. So that's
I had to watch it twice because we watched it as soon as it dropped and I was really tired and I was barely keeping my eyes open.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm sure I missed something. Well, I didn't actually. I rewatched it and rewatching it, I was like, oh, okay, I'm taking in more of the cinematography of it now that I'm more awake. But I followed it great both times.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing. And it feels like it made Disney Plus seem even cheaper because I can't believe how cool that is for the pittance that I'm paying and I'm still on the free trial. All right. Hey, by the way, next week, our show is all about the Film Fest. We do the Film Fest once a month and we love it. And December's movie is going all the way back to 1933. With the classic King Kong.
Oh, yeah.
I'm excited about that.
This is the one I always think of. This is the one I always compare other King Kongs to.
Kind of have to, right?
This is the wellspring.
Yeah, and it's also weird. It's a weird movie, partly because it's old, but the stop motion in it is very, very early. This was groundbreaking at the time, but today you look at it and it's just kind of freaky. And I love that about it. I have a big connection to the 70s one, which wasn't even very good, but I have a connection to that because somebody bought me a book when I was a kid that had big layouts of photos of like the giant arm on the street. And then it turns out that arm was only it was only 20 feet long and it wasn't connected to the rest of the ape. And it was a special effects kind of thing. And I was really intrigued by it. about a movie that wasn't actually very good. But yeah, this is the one. And I actually like the Peter Jackson thing as well. So we can have some fun comparing all of that. But yeah, King Kong, 1933's King Kong. That's next week right here on the Current Geek Film Festival. Oh, by which there's a list. If you go to currentgeek.com, there's a list of all the movies we've done up to this point. A lot of people are asking for a pilot version of that list. I will do that also. I just haven't gotten around to it. But yeah, we'll get that up there as well. Don't leave yet, though, because Legal Geek swings right in after we're done talking here, talking about some privacy law updates, including the recent FCC settlement with Retina X over stalking slash tracking apps and the latest problem with Facebook capturing camera images without your consent. So more on that coming up with Legal Geek right after this. Also, before we go, Tom Merritt, do you have anything you're doing this week people should know about?
Yeah, Daily Tech News Show every day, Monday through Friday. Keep up just a half an hour. And you can be one of the smartest people in the room about technology because you're just keeping up with us, helping you understand what all is out there. We comb through all the feeds so you don't have to. And if you want to get that, you can subscribe at dailytechnewsshow.com or wherever fine podcasts are delivered.
I think that sounds fantastic. For the rest of y'all, if you're looking for more from me, go to frogpants.com. Go to currentgeek.com for this show, Current Geek on Twitter. Tom's at Ace Detect. I'm at Scott Johnson. And more shows like this over at frogpants.com. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, for all of you. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we take a look at a couple more news stories in the always evolving field of privacy law, these being related to Facebook and stalking software apps. Retina X Studios is the maker of three tracking apps designed to keep tabs on computers or mobile devices. These software apps are called Mobile Spy, Phone Sheriff, and Sniper Spy. Such apps allow for real-time monitoring and reports of activities and movements of such devices, along with some blocking capabilities. On their website, Retina X markets these apps as useful for tracking employees' use of computers as well as children. In other words, people and devices that the software user hypothetically has control over. However, in 2018, some of the data collected by these apps became subject to public knowledge, thanks to some hackers who attacked this company and its technology. For example, some photographs saved on phones for the user's review were revealed. This data breach led, as most do, to a consumer protection complaint to the FCC, which investigated the company and eventually settled on an agreement to avoid significant monetary sanctions. In addition to the failure to secure all data from the hackers, the FCC found that Retina X did not do enough to ensure that the applications were used solely for legitimate tracking purposes. Evidence supporting this conclusion included that Retina X facilitated surreptitious use of tracking by telling customers how to keep the tracking app icon from showing up on the device it was installed on. Moreover, the app could be installed without the knowledge or consent of the device user by bypassing manufacturer restrictions, such as by jailbreaking devices. Both of these practices open the door for significant criminal and dangerous use of the software. So the FCC settlement requires that the company halt sales of any software that bypasses security protections, while also making the customers affirmatively state that they will only use such apps to monitor children, or employees, or someone who provides written consent. The establishment of comprehensive security protocols to protect sensitive data is also being required. Despite the FCC efforts to protect consumers, we must all understand that such types of software exist and are easily obtained. This week, another big privacy issue hit the news about Facebook, which had its iOS app operating without user consent to activate and capture live video images with the rear-facing camera while the user was scrolling through their newsfeed. The live video capture was hidden behind other on-screen content. Whether this was intentional or an accidental bug, as Facebook asserts, Facebook took swift action to patch this issue and remove the problem from the iOS app. Even with the fix, this is another reputational hit to Facebook, with consumers growing ever more sensitive and aware of the lack of data privacy on that social networking platform. The bottom line is, consumers and private citizens have a lot of help on their side in the battle over data and privacy, including government agencies like the FCC, as well as all the technophiles who keep close tabs on the functionalities within apps like Facebook. Nevertheless, we would all be wise to be aware of how open and at risk our sensitive and private data and information can be, so that we can opt in or take precautions based on our own personal preferences. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.